Stugatz here for Advance Auto Parts. These days, it's good to be prepared, and that includes your vehicle. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing and installation with no appointment needed. Batteries start at just $79.99. They'll also have curbside pickup on any order. Enter the code DAN20 when you buy online to save 20% on your order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See stores for details.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Another Greg Cody Tuesday, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Pachyderms.
What are you doing with pachyderms? You're now just uttering again just things that come to your mind.
I referred to an elephant earlier.
I know, but are you just kind of like, what the hell is going on around here?
There was a link, obviously, between an earlier reference to elephants and the more formal
pachyderm. Why are you uttering a synonym for elephants for no reason about 30 seconds after we've discussed elephants?
There's a linear quality to the whole conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I hear silence, and I want to putty it in with a word, preferably a three-syllable word. Pachyderm.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
All right, Stugatz, I am vowing, okay? I'm vowing to try to be nicer to Greg Cody today. It's a vow I've made a lot of times. I tend to fail on this vow, but many people have complained that they're not, during the pandemic, getting enough of their beloved buffoon, Greg Cody. And so I want to be kinder to him, but you tell me what I'm supposed to do with the fact that last week, okay, he sent word, hey, look, I don't have any back in my day this week, but I'm going to start doing it every other week, and I'm going to begin next week. That next week is here, and he doesn't have a back in my day again, Stugatz. And I'm asking you, if I'm trying to be nice, how do I absorb that information as he continues to be the laziest, most entitled narcissist in the history of our show?
I would just say at this point, accept Greg for what Greg is. He might tell you one thing. You've done it with me for the most part. I would just say, listen, Greg might tell you he's going to have a back in my day ready. There's a good chance he probably won't. You just have to be prepared to roll with it. I understand your frustration. I understand you trying to be nicer to your friend as he gets older. I do. I get it. And I understand that he's very frustrating. But he is your friend, and he cares about you deeply, and you have to accept the people who are closest to you with all their warts, with everything. And Greg certainly has a zillion warts.
Can I get him to care about me a little less and care a little more about having personal and professional pride? Because I'd take that trade if I could just get him to do the one thing that we ask him to do around here once a week. I've been making fun of Greg Cody for a long time on this front, Stugatz. Yeah. I've called him an underwear columnist for a long time because his favorite kind of column to write is not talking to anybody, not doing any reporting. It's just sitting in his house in his underwear writing a column with no work whatsoever. He loves the pandemic because it allows him to sit around and just write underwear columns by mandate. And so my question to you, Cody, is what are you so busy with that you couldn't do a back in my day other than all of your restaurant visits as you go out actively seeking the pandemic? What are you doing with your days that you can't do the one thing that you're supposed to do around here weekly?
First of all, I am not actively seeking the pandemic. I'm heroically fighting to repel it. The underwear column is a pejorative. And the truth of the matter is I'm usually in khaki shorts, not underwear, when I'm writing those columns. But, the truth of the matter is I had a back in my day ready to go. And I was in mid-research because, as you know, I like my back in my days to be educational. And this one was on picnics. I was going to lament the demise of the picnic and the wicker basket that I love so. But then I'm researching the etymology of the picnic, and it's all fun and good. And then I come to a jarring paragraph that I'm going to read verbatim and this is not funny. In the etymology of the word picnic, it says, the claim that the word picnic derived from lynching parties has existed in Black American communities for many years. And I came to a screeching halt because at no time, particularly at this time, I don't want to be anywhere near making a back of my day about something that has that paragraph.
All right, hold on a second. Hold on a second, okay? Because I got mad at breakfast the other day for telling me I was racist for having Aunt Jemima on the bottle, and now I'm getting mad at the idea of having a lovely picnic that I have never associated with what it is that he's talking about.
See,
does anybody, is there anyone in our audience that associates that? First of all, way to drag us right into a hole right at the start of the show, okay?
Like, you're welcome.
Okay, it's not.
You sound terrible.
It's not just that he sounds terrible, and it's not just that he doesn't have a back in my day. I want you to examine what he just threw on my lap. I want you to examine the one time on this show that he's decided I'm going to do some research. I'm just going to read this directly. And I want you to examine sort of the detour we took on, he could have done something else, but nope, he just immediately saw that with picnic and quit. He just quit working, went right back inside, and just stopped everything that he was doing.
I think the problem is that he was doing this research at like 11 p.m. last night.
Yeah. It seems like all he's been doing based on his Twitter timeline is episodes of his new podcast. I mean, it was released like 2 weeks ago. He's already on episode 18. So if you're looking for an answer, Dan, that's it. I mean,
all right. But lest you think that Greg Cody's self-involvement is something that cannot be exceeded, on this week's Greg Cody podcast featuring Greg Cody, you know who he talks to? Another man named Greg Cody.
It's glorious. Oh, it's must listen.
Is he an upgrade? Perhaps that Greg Cody should join us every Tuesday.
That Greg Cody is a puppeteer. He's an actual puppeteer. This is something. Also, what you can look forward to on the new Greg Cody show featuring Greg Cody and this week with another guest, Greg Cody, is the debut of Mount Gregmore. Mount Gregmore. So if you want.
Sounds like the best episode yet.
If you want.
Thank you.
If you want yet more Greg Cody, and I don't feel like anyone was clamoring for any more Greg Cody, but if you want any more Greg Cody, he's got a podcast. He is one of the oldest people in the universe to have a podcast. And the podcast is The Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody. This week
with Greg Cody. That's not featuring. The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
So this week.
Great review and listen.
So this week's Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody, with special guest Greg Cody. And as you said, the debut of Mount Gregmore.
I'm jealous.
Mike, get me the short stat of the day music because I just want to give Stugatz a stat that he's going to be amazed by.
Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day.
So this is from Mark Bennett on Twitter. At 40 years old, Jerry Rice had 93 receptions at 40 years old. There are two players tied for second for career receptions after the age of 40, right after Jerry Rice. Those two players with catches after the age of 40, with one catch, Tom Brady, with one catch, Brett Favre. Those are the only other people.
The gunslinger.
Who are second to Jerry Rice in catches after the age of 40.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. A weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
You have driven into a radio studio right. and sat with us doing a radio show for, what, 3 years now?
Something like that.
What have you learned? Three years.
Right.
You drive in here. You sit on radio with us. You're a smart man. We love having you around. What have you learned?
You know, a lot of it is nuanced. A lot of it is difficult to describe in words. Most of it's just feel. You know what I mean?
So nothing. So the answer is nothing.
That's right.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Guest on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Penzo line. What happened?
You just sound really bad.
I do. The last few days, I've never sounded better, to be honest with you. Except for right there. All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on sequence 4A wear test using SAE5W-30. Here's your SportsCenter update. Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross of the Nationals, Ian Desmond of the Rockies, Mike Leake of the Diamondbacks have opted out of returning to play baseball this season. DeAndre Jordan and Spencer Dinwiddie of the Nets say that they have tested positive for the coronavirus. And finally, Chris Bosh still hasn't returned the championship ring Pat Riley gave him at their 2010 meeting. That's awesome. Soccer is back on ESPN+, Serie A, FA Cup, MLS, and more. Plus, get original series, exclusive studio shows, and the complete 30 for 30 library. Stream soccer from the best leagues and tournaments around the world, all in HD, all on your favorite devices. The beautiful game lives on ESPN+. Sign up today at ESPNplus.com or in the ESPN app. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Pat Riley got us good. He got us good. The whole legend behind getting the big three outside of them colluding and agreeing to it years before is Pat Riley going into a meeting and throwing championship rings on a table. That Chris Bosh story leads me to believe it was a fake ring. Because Chris goes on to say, the whole story is Pat throws the rings on there and he picks up the 2006 ring and Pat tells Chris Bosh, you hold on to that until you win one of your own. And Chris Bosh goes on to say, I tried to give it back to him once, and Pat's like, what are you talking about? I don't even remember that. It was a dummy ring. He used a fake ring to seal the big three.
Are you reporting that exclusively? You're jumping to that conclusion.
Pat would know what he's talking about if he's missing his actual 2006 ring.
I mean, I think it's a fair conclusion for Mike to jump to. And you know Riley, if it was real, Riley wants the ring back. The fact that he's not pushing to get it back suggests to me that it's a total fake, that perhaps he got one of those grocery stores for a quarter. I mean,
it's a heady play, though. If you know you're going to be dropping them on a table for dramatic effect, you don't want them to get chipped. You don't want I'm sure they're very valuable, these things. So it's a heady play by Riley.
Wow, so you guys now have Pat Riley having a bunch of dummy rings that he uses just for those occasions when he's recruiting, and he's hoping that no one's got a jeweler's eye and can notice that those are not real rings.
He's got a prop department. That or it's Wayne Simeon's ring. It's somebody's ring. I'm not doubting that it's a real ring because Chris Bosh probably knows what one of those looks like. But for Pat to say, what are you even talking about, and not remember the fact that he's missing his 06 ring, this is leading me to believe it's fake.
I mean, I honestly think that that's the better alternative to just Pat's old and he forgot he gave away something very valuable, Dan. You don't want that running the franchise.
Well, I really don't know which one's worse because Mike Ryan just made him Gallagher and Carrot Top. He's got a prop department.
Or was it just Ellisberg's ring? He's like, hey, give me the ring. I got an idea how to like seal this deal.
Stugatz, have you seen the video during a game of Cam Newton's? He is inside of the Green Bay. I think he's playing Green Bay inside of the 10-yard line, and somebody on the Packer defense starts shouting, wheel route, wheel route, wheel route. And then what Cam Newton does is he says out loud before starting, you know, his cadence, He says, you've been watching film, huh? And then he's like, that's cool. Watch this. And then he drops back, and it's not a wheel route. It's a fake wheel route. And they score a touchdown with Christian McCaffrey. And I will never, and you will never, and no one listening to this will ever be as cool as Cam Newton was in that particular moment. Like, you.
I love that. The fact that he had the conversation during an NFL game in which he is playing the most important position in sports, the wherewithal to look at a guy, hey, you've been studying film, huh? Like, the game slows down that much for Cam Newton, where he's aware, he has the conversation, he knows it's not the play he's going to, and then he executes the play that he wants. And the Patriots just got that by sitting around and breathing. It's unbelievable.
I wonder how often NFL Films protects players, because I could totally see Baker Mayfield doing that and throwing a pick six.
I am finding fascinating what Stugatz said yesterday during weekend observations, which is not just that Boston is getting a black guy at that position. Boston's getting that black guy at that position. And that one's got some potential to go wrong quickly. If you know Boston's history, they haven't started a quarterback who they didn't draft, Stugatz, themselves since 1993. Scott Seculies was the last time they started a quarterback that wasn't drafted by them. You know Boston's history. Boston's black players will tell you of their history. And now he's taking over for Tom Brady, and his style, Stugatz, is swag. It's all swag, and yeah. It'll be real interesting to see what the reaction to Boston is.
It's tough. He's the guy that's going to replace the guy, right? And that's going to be difficult. But there's also an opportunity for Cam Newton. And I know what you're saying, Dan, in terms of the city of Boston. And that's really the shameful thing about playing in the city of Boston. You lose, you come to those press conferences dressed the way Cam's going to be dressed. You know he's going to hear it. He's going to get it. But there is an opportunity for Cam to replace a guy who left New England. His last pass was a pick six. And if Cam has a big year and they have a big year, he'll be beloved in that city right up until he stinks.
Well, I'd be careful with that, right? Because there were plenty of people who didn't like Cam when he was an MVP. Never mind stinking. There were plenty right. of people who do not like that he knows how good he is. There are plenty of people who do not like how that he knows how statuesque beautiful he is. And so that stuff doesn't tend to fly in Boston, but specifically at that position, replacing that guy on that team, it's an interesting mix of cocktail ingredients.
Here's your SportsCenter update. The Fulton County Registration and Elections Board approved the plan by the Atlanta Hawks to transform State Farm Arena into a massive polling station for Georgia's primary runoff election on August 11th and early voting for the general election scheduled for November 3rd. The NBA and NBA Players Association are planning to paint Black Lives Matter on the court inside both sidelines in all three arenas the league will use at the Walt Disney World Resort. And finally, director Christopher Nolan doesn't allow chairs on set, says Anne Hathaway. Quote, his reasoning is, if you have chairs, people will sit. And if they are sitting, they are not working. All right. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So we've got Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. We were looking for him all day yesterday. We have now tracked him, and we have cornered him, and we want to know how Cam Newton is going over in New England. I thought this was going to be a rebuilding year. I thought they were going to basically go with Stidham and try and figure it out, but I felt like they were dead and buried, and here they are again, and it seems like they're back. Are you there, Bob? Okay, we've misplaced Bob again.
All right.
We will try to locate him.
I guess we didn't find him.
What is the backstory on this, Mike? Because we are now 0-for-3 on trying to find Bob Ryan, having Bob Ryan, and then going to Bob Ryan, and then getting nothing.
Well, that's the first time we've actually gotten him on the line. I did speak with him, and it sounded like he was there. I don't know. He might have accidentally hit mute on his phone. He's in the Northeast in an undisclosed location where signal isn't great.
Okay. I can tell you there are certain locations, I don't want to give his away, in the Northeast where if you're in one of them, you're in another country. I'm telling you, and cell phone reception is really, really bad. And so perhaps we should stop our pursuit of Bob Ryan at this point.
When you're 0-for-3 on Bob Ryan, put it on the poll, Guillermo. When you've swung and missed 3 times on Bob Ryan, should you let go of the Bob Ryan helium balloon and let it fly into the sky? Let it fly away. I loved Stugatz's Ron Rivera in talking about the name of the team, the Washington Racial Slurs. I love that his quote is a discussion for another time. Like, if this ain't the time, Ron, when's the other time? Like, if this,
when do you want to have it?
If this right now isn't the time, then what is the apocalyptic world that Ron Rivera is waiting for where that'll be the time where he's going to sit up in his bed that night and be like, you know what? Now's the time. I can feel the time. It's right now to have this discussion.
You'll be happy to know that Mr. Ryan has stepped outside.
All right, very good. So, Bob Ryan, how does this go over Cam Newton in New England? And thank you for joining us, if indeed you are joining us.
Well, I'm trying my best to join you. I'm 180 miles northwest of Boston on a lake in Maine, so that's why you have difficulty reaching me. Now, I can't verify what's happening in the sea, but the constituency of one here, the local storekeeper who has a Patriots banner that he flies outside his house, he's very happy. He's happy. So in Weld, Maine, it's a thumbs up. Now, and I think this is as close to a no-brainer, no-lose thing for the Patriots as it's humanly conceivable, don't you?
Yes.
What do they have to lose? What? It's cost-effective beyond NFL belief. It makes just completely perfect sense. If it doesn't work out, are they worse off than they were 72 hours ago? No. I mean, this is like, you got to be kidding me. This is like, it's too good to be true.
If I asked you a week ago, what were the Patriots' chances, you would have said what, and how does that change with this signing?
Well, just that the time factor was time, as the thing played out and Newton had fewer suitors, as everyone was you know, getting their rosters straightened out and he wasn't included. I never say never with Belichick. It always made sense to me. It always did. Why not Newton? Why not bring Newton in? I was an advocate of this. And but I guess the chances, I don't know, what is it, 20% maybe, 80, no. But just because, I don't know why, but it's always made perfect sense to me.
Okay, you know what? I'm tired of all these media members taking a victory lap because they called something that always made perfect sense to them. Like, we all knew that Cam Newton to the Patriots made perfect sense, and it was confusing for months that they weren't or didn't seem to be interested, but then the price dropped out. I'm curious, Bob, what needs to happen for the Patriots to actually be enduringly remembered as the cheatingest of cheating teams, given that just this signing camouflaged the news from yesterday that, again, mm-hmm. they got hit with more penalties and more punishments than any football team ever has for cheating.
Oh, well, that's the great question, the legacy. That's for the world, the public, and historians to decide. And they look back on this era and say that these championships and Super Bowl appearances were accompanied by the most severe amount of envelope pushing. That's all some of it is. I mean, they're not all the same, Dan. Spygate was bad. Deflategate was a hoax, bonus, nonsense, idiot, ridiculous, nothing. And this is somewhere in between. So they're all, but the idea that this is what you, this is part of the deal, the full package of the Belichick era. He brings you to championships with a taint. You have to live with the stench the rest of your fan life. I wrote this back in, at Spygate, and what's changed? Nothing. This is who he is. This is the hand the Boston, the New England Patriots fans have been dealt. They have to live with it.
Is it meaningful, the echo of it, though, Bob? If when I ask every fan listening to this, who's the best coach ever, their answer is going to be Bill Belichick. And if I ask who's the best quarterback ever, their answer is going to be Tom Brady. Other cheaters are not regarded that way. Bob, you've seen what we did to Barry Bonds.
Yeah, that's a good question. But Barry Bonds was personally an odiously, hideously unlikable personality. Brady was not. So that would start with that. I mean, let's face it. Bonds might have been able to charm his way into some kind of public approbation. He was incapable of doing that. So that's one difference right there. No, it's a very, very good question. And it depends on, you know, first of all, can you separate? Here's the thing. Anything that we're talking about here smacks of Watergate in that it was unnecessary. None of this was necessary. There's no proof that any of this had anything, and particularly Deflategate, had anything to do with winning and losing. It was you're violating, you're cheating, you're trying to, you're trying to win all 50 states, not just 49, the way Nixon did. So that's Belichick's mentality, apparently. It's a sports version of amorality. And that's who he is. He doesn't even care what you think or that anybody thinks poorly of him, or other than his cadre of buddies, you know, the Sabins and the Ferences and Myers and the ones who stick by him in the league. I have no idea how many friends he has in the league, if any.
Bob Ryan, Boston Globe with us on ESPN Radio. What did you make of the Red Sox coming out recently and saying, yep, we had a bunch of racist incidents at our park?
Well, it was heartening and reassuring to know that they get it and that they weren't trying to go into some stupid denial. What they're going to do about it, I don't know. Are you going to have a morality check of the fans to make the screen the inherent bigots that are going to go in and as opposed to, I don't know how you handle it, frankly. But the idea that they acknowledge it is good, and you know, it calls to mind that Boston has a lot of explaining to do over the years. We know that. And also, though, specifically addressing the Torrey Hunter situation, when he said what he said, there were media members in the radio community, particularly that were casting doubt on it, and you know, that was bogus and all that, and it was very embarrassing to the rest of us, frankly. And the idea that the Patriots would refute this and completely, you know, disassociate themselves with those people, I thought was good.
Bob, is your city being portrayed fairly?
I guess it, how can, you know, here we go, this is what it is. Probably, yes. I would have thought that when it happened, I was distraught because I thought that we had moved away from it in a pretty good fashion. We had welcomed and championed a number of great athletes of color in the last several years, going all the way back to Mo Vaughn, frankly. And of course, with basketball players, you've always got athletes of color. And so I thought that we had moved away from it to a degree that that there were plenty of athletes who liked coming to Boston, liked playing here, and yet the idea that there were people such as Hunter who had specific no trade clauses that didn't want to go to Boston because it was a racist city, that's disturbing. So as long as that climate's out there, and by the way, consider the source always. Torrey Hunter is a baseball nobleman. So, you know, if Corey Hunter says it, I'm going to believe it.
Bob, Stugatz has been making me laugh here during your answer because he just texted me, man, what a terrible spot I just put Bob in.
His own city.
And Chris, meanwhile, has spent the entire segment trying to figure out how to invent a metal detector style wand that detects racism, because you can make a lot of money with that. Bob, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome, guys. Sorry it was such a difficult technical procedure, but thanks for having me.
No, Bob, I'm sorry.
Pay that man his money.
Advance Auto Parts, people. Chris, get that to me by the next segment, okay? The metal detector style wand that detects racism that we could just start using at Fenway Park.
Don't let him in. Don't let him in.
As the siren goes off and somebody gets shamed, slink back to their car with their head on.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Mike.
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, he's been so bad. And it hasn't, like, it's been, he's been bad basically for 45 minutes, because before the show, he was just aggravating me. It's bad today. Like, I don't even know where we go here. Usually the default is that he's bad, but I don't, it's so bad that, like, he's stopping the show.
It's beyond bad.
Yeah. Like, it's really, like, he's bad that you can't really do much with.
I bet you he's mad outside right now.
Oh,
I bet
God.
You, because he can be sensitive. Is he out there pouting?
Doesn't seem to have a worry in the world.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your SportsCenter update. The Fulton County Registration and Elections Board approved a plan by the Atlanta Hawks to transform State Farm Arena into a massive polling station for Georgia's primary runoff election on August 11th and early voting for the general election scheduled for November 3rd. The NBA and National Basketball Players Association are planning to paint Black Lives Matter on the court inside both sidelines in all three arenas the league will use at the Walt Disney World resorts. And finally, an unusually bright star inside the Kinmen Dwarf Galaxy, located 75 million light years from Earth, has disappeared from view. The authors of new research published today in monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, led by PhD student Andrew Allen of Trinity College Dublin, have conjured two possible explanations. Either the star has experienced a dramatic drop in luminosity and is now partially hiding behind some dust, or it transformed into a black hole without sparking a supernova explosion. If it's the latter, it would represent just the second known failed supernova. How about that? For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Stugatz has been a Knicks fan all of his life. The Knicks have not done any meaningful winning while he has been old enough to remember it. And now comes the news, Stugatz.
They went to a couple of NBA finals, I'll remind you, with Pat Riley. I mean, John Starks had a terrible game 7. I don't want to revisit it,
though. Okay, well, you're the one who said, wait a minute. Can you put it on the poll, Guillermo? Can you say, I will remind you, and then a couple of words later say, I don't want to revisit it?
I took a quick revisit, and it reminded me it's not a place I want to visit.
Okay, I mean, I'm about to make it worse, though, because Bill Simmons is saying on his podcast that in 2010, LeBron's first choice was absolutely the Knicks.
What?
But that the meeting was a disaster. The meeting with Donnie Walsh, and Donnie Walsh showed up in a wheelchair. The meeting was a disaster. Stugatz, we knew the meeting was a disaster just from how it looked that Pat Riley was walking into the room and how it was that Donnie Walsh wasn't walking into the room.
I remember at the time saying to you, how can I compete with this? My guy is showing up in a wheelchair with no rings, and Pat Riley is showing up in an Armani suit, and he is dropping rings all over the table. We are doomed.
Just for those of you who do not know and might think that we're being insensitive, just know that the moment that Donnie Walsh showed up, it was an unexpected surprise for all of us that he was in a wheelchair. Like, Donnie Walsh, we are not making fun of the handicap there. He just got an injury at an unfortunate time that made it look particularly disheveled when he was going to meet LeBron.
At a time that presentation and optics were important, Pat Riley had his down, apparently with a dummy ring. We're still trying to get to the bottom of that. And Donnie Walsh had a wheelchair that caught people by surprise.
We played the sound yesterday of Buster Olney saying there is a 0% chance that baseball finishes its season and a 5% chance that it starts at all. Greg Cody is equally pessimistic. You don't think this is the whole thing's a Jenga tower.
Yeah, I have increasing doubts that any of these sports are going to complete their seasons. And everything changes, and it's changing for the worse, right? I mean, yeah, coronavirus is spiking, particularly in Florida, where most of these sports are restarting. I'll become very pessimistic whether this thing's going to get off the ground.
Is that a burn on your arm?
It is. I had a kitchen mishap Sunday while making dinner, and hot oil splashed up onto my arm and gave me quite a second-degree burn. But I survived. I toughed it out, and I'm here for the Levitard show.
Playing with pain today. Let's take it easy on the guy, huh?
Have I been rough on him today? How bad is that? How
have you not heard the imaging every rejoin?
Well, I didn't do that. His own son did that to him.
You keep resetting the show saying, I'm trying to be nicer to Greg Cody. We've never had a day where every rejoin is just devoted to how awful he is.
But he seems unfazed by it. Dare I say he seems pleased by it. It's weird.
I mean, you know, the sound of my own voice is medicine. It's making this feel better, making my arm feel better.
He, when I told him about this bit yesterday, he was like he said earlier in the show, he was honestly very defensive about it. Why am I the only one getting made fun of? Blah, blah, blah. But once I sent them to him and he heard a couple of them, he's like, okay, I like this. A lot of me, I like this.
Let me explain to you, Chris, the happiest times I have known your father for damn near 40 years. Okay. The happiest I ever see your father, where the joy is something that is on his face and you can see his smile from ear to ear, is when he is simply listening to himself befoul our show. Like where he's, no one finds the dynamic of Greg Cody annoys Dan funnier than your father does.
I would bet of all the millions of podcasts there are in the world, nobody listens to their own podcast more than Greg Cody. I'm dead serious about this. He has to be in the, he listens to the episodes of the Greg Cody show easily 4 or 5 times over back to back before they go out every week.
Attaboy.
I'm a perfectionist. I'm trying to hone my craft.
In the latest issue or edition of Greg Cody's podcast, The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody, he talks to a puppeteer who is also named Greg Cody, and he debuts his Mount Gregmore. It is simply the most narcissistic endeavor in the history of narcissism. What I'm telling you is whatever the famous story is about narcissism where someone looks into a lake and sees their own reflection, Greg Cody looks into a lake and what he sees is the Greg Cody show with Greg Cody with a guest named Greg Cody and also Mount Gregmore.
And I'll remind you, he started the podcast 20 days ago. He's on episode 18.
Can't get enough of his own voice. And he doesn't care. It's fairly amazing. He doesn't care if again and again he's terrible as long as it's his voice talking.
Correct.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
Thank you for the confirmation.
I mean, he's so happy. He's so unbelievably happy that we're talking about him, that he's at the center of the conversation. He doesn't even have to be saying anything. It's just us talking about him. Look at him. Thumbs up. A 66-year-old thumb just went up. Oh, so much mediocrity. We learn something every week around here about the animal kingdom. If you want to talk to Ron McGill of Zoo Miami, 786-456-4837. Is the telephone number. What is the most amazing thing, Ron, and thank you for joining us, that you've heard of a porpoise or a pod of porpoises or a dolphin or a pod of dolphin doing?
Well, actually, the story that Stu guys just mentioned, that the group of dolphins rescued Dick Van Dyke, is that true?
Yeah.
A pod of porpoises did.
A pod of porpoises, not put it on the poll, Guillermo. Do you know the difference between a porpoise and a dolphin?
There really is no difference in the sense that, you know, a bottlenose dolphin is probably a porpoise. It depends, except that, you know, we tend to use the term dolphin for the mahi-mahi, which is the food that we eat. And I remember people coming in. When I first moved to Florida, I went to the restaurant and it said dolphin on the menu. And I went, what? They're eating flipper? This is disgusting. I'm out of here. It's a different fish. So, no, I'm serious.
I know. Thank you.
But anyway, I have heard of several instances, you know, there's that story with Elion that supposedly dolphins helped him out there in the ocean. So, you know, there are several stories, several sailors, several people that have been stranded at sea that say they were rescued by a dolphin, they were helped by a dolphin, they were able to ride the dorsal fin towards the shore. So I don't disbelieve that at all. I think dolphins are incredibly intelligent. We've gone this over many times on this show. I think they're more intelligent than maybe some people I know, and there's a lot more we need to learn about them. And I think they're also compassionate animals.
Chris, what did you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, how many pit bulls would it take to take out a full-grown Siberian tiger?
Wow. That's a good one. That would be tough. I would say minimum a dozen, and they'd have to be well-trained pit bulls. I mean, these pit bulls would have to be in tip-top shape and know what they're doing. But it would take a minimum of a dozen, and that would be, you know, it still would be a coin toss.
John, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Ron, I was just wondering if animals' arms or legs ever fall asleep like humans do and what kind of reaction they might have if that happens.
That's a good question, and yes, they do. I have seen that happen a couple of times. I actually used to see it with my dog. He'd sleep on a funky way on his leg. He'd get up, he'd start moving, and he'd almost fall down, and then his leg would come back to life, and he'd kind of get it going again. So, yes, I mean, it's obviously possible that it happens to animals for the same reason it happens to people. If you sleep on it the wrong way or it goes numb the wrong way, it does happen to animals. They react, you know, a little bit of surprise at first, but they adapt very quickly, and as soon as the circulation comes back, they're back to normal pretty quickly.
It's a good question, though, because if you lose your legs in the animal kingdom, you'd be terrified. I've always wondered, for example, the first people who saw lightning, what they made of that, because without any information, like,
I'm armed with all kinds of information. I'm terrified.
I know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, imagine an animal. A dog just wakes up, was just sleeping. It's like, oh, no, my legs don't work and things hunt me. Like, that's horrifying. That's so much worse than us going through it and having a mind that understands what it means for your leg to fall asleep.
It's actually kind of funny because, I mean, like I said, when I saw my dog do it, he'd get up and he'd kind of freak out and fall. And then he'd get right up and start shaking his leg right away. So he knows to get the circulation back in there, and he was fine. You know, but again, it would be horrifying for an animal if he doesn't think it's going to go away. But fortunately, as you know with most people, once your arm's asleep, you start shaking around, it wakes up pretty quickly, and animals tend to respond fairly quickly.
Donovan, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Seriously, you got to think about that. You're walking along, you're primitive, you're just looking for something to eat, and maybe, I just stumbled upon a coconut, and oh my God, lightning! Lightning, Jim, what is that? I don't even know what the name for it is, because
Dan, it would be worse, not just the lightning. If the lightning is close to you, you know the sound that makes.
Well, that's the other thing. Stugatz, imagine that. You're just walking around as primitive man, and lightning strikes, and you're like, whoa, that was scary. And then the heavens just start making noise.
This is it. You have to say to yourself, this is it. We're done.
Donovan, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Donovan.
Based on hunting strategy and hunting tactics, who would be a better defensive coordinator, an African wild dog or a wolf?
You know what? Six, one half dozen the other. I'm going to go with both of them. I think defensively, I would have to go with the wolves because the wolves are bigger and stronger. But their tactics, their planning, their strategies are very similar. But being bigger and stronger, I'd want to have the wolf defensive team.
Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Yeah, there's a sea lion in a zoo in Spain that's been so neglected that seaweed has started growing on its coat, and people there believe that it's dying now off on its own. What are the steps that zoos are taking to prevent something like that from happening?
Well, every organization, every, you know, geographical area, like here in the United States, we have the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, AZA. In Europe, they have the European Association of Zoos and Aquariums. All good zoos should be accredited by those facilities, and those organizations, you know, pretty much do what they can to avoid any of that happening. My suspicion is that this is some roadside attraction, neglecting the animal. Hopefully, through the power of social media and awareness, people are not going to let that happen, and changes will be made there. I don't believe, you know, seaweed doesn't grow out of a a sea lion. It might be algae or something on it, or it may have gone swimming and gone into seaweed and some of it stuck to its back when it came out of water. A lot of this stuff you got to take with a grain of salt. People sometimes see things and they interpret it the wrong way. But if the animal is in fact starving, not being cared for, you would think that there would be some human compassion, whether it be somebody who sees it or a guest or somebody is going to report that on social media. There's going to be some kind of uproar and somebody's going to go save that animal.
Are sea lions the closest thing that the sea has to dogs?
Yeah, I would think sea lions, any of the pinnipeds, the seals, the sea lions, even sea otters in some way, probably the closest thing, yeah, that what you have to a dog.
Justin.
Good analogy.
Justin, you're on. It just seems like they'd be fun to play with. They're not dangerous at all, right?
What? Are you out of your mind? They can be incredibly dangerous. Some of the worst injuries that some of my friends have experienced working with animals in captivity have been from sea lions. They will tear you up like hamburger.
Jesus. Put it on the pole. Put it on the pole.
Have you ever seen the skull of a sea lion, Dan?
Not really.
It'll make most dogs look like a hamster.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Did you know that a sea lion would tear off your face like hamburger?
Not could. There's a big difference, Dan. Stop putting words in my mouth. It has the capability of doing it. If it feels threatened or feels whatever reason it's going to be aggressive toward you, yes, it could kill you. It's a really strong, fast, powerful animal.
Justin, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Justin.
Hi, Ron. I was wondering if wild cats purred. Like, was that cheetah purring when it was in your bed?
Wild cats, some of them do purr. Probably the biggest cat that purrs is the cheetah. A cheetah will purr. It's so loud you'll think it's roaring. It's like a... I mean, people actually think it's roaring, but it is a purr, and the cheetah can do it very loudly.
That's how my father snores. I'm not even making that up. Greg, you're on.
With,
Greg, you're on. You're on. Greg, what do you have for Ron McGill? That's you, Cody. Your name is.
Okay, you introduced me as if I were a guest on the phone.
I got to defend Cody here. That was a little weird way to bring him into the
proceedings. It was weird, right, Mike?
It was, man. I got your back. You're usually bad, but.
It was like he was on line six. Yeah. I mean,
Greg, you're on ESPN Radio. What do you have for Ron McGill, Greg?
Hey, Ron. On a serious note, if I may, four Zoo Miami workers recently tested positive for COVID. I'm wondering how they're doing, and I'm also wondering how zoo traffic has been since you guys reopened.
You know, zoo traffic has been pretty good, Greg. I got to be honest with you. We are at about 80% of what the same attendance figures were last year, which is better than most other facilities in the country. Most other zoos are only around 50%. And yes, we have had four employees test positive for COVID-19. Fortunately, only one of them had any direct public contact. And fortunately, all of them are home recuperating. None of them have had to be hospitalized. They're all fairly young, which seems to be the trend here in Florida that, you know, it's the younger generation that seems to be testing positive lately. Through contact tracing, we've had to also send home several other employees to get tested, and they won't be allowed back to work until their tests come back negative. So, you know, this is an ongoing fluid type of thing, but we have 500 employees here at the zoo. It's a huge facility. So to me, it wasn't a matter of if, but when this was going to occur. And having the numbers that have spiked in Florida within the last couple of weeks, it's not shocking to me. Fortunately, like I said, they are recovering at home. It's not serious that they're required hospitalization, and now we have to wait for the other employees that they had close contact with to see the results of their test.
Tony, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Hey, Ron. Obviously, coconut crab has the strongest grip per capita. Could it grip onto a plane and fly somewhere?
God, I love these listeners.
Something,
man.
On the wing.
Theoretically, you would think they could grab onto the plane and hold onto it. However, once the plane reaches a certain altitude, which of course is going to plummet temperatures, the crab is going to freeze, let go, and plummet to the ground and shatter into many little pieces.
Matt, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey there, Ron. I have a golf question. If Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and Greg Norman all turned into their animal nicknames, a tiger, a bear, and a shark, who would win to become the GOAT?
Wow. Well, the bear is out. I don't think the bear is going to beat the tiger. The tiger, animal-wise, is going to be the most formidable predator there, assuming that the tiger is fighting the shark on land. But if the tiger's fighting the shark in the water, it's going to be the shark. You know, the bear is just going to be a spectator here, guys. I'm sorry, the bear is not going to win on either of those cases. He may hold himself up against a tiger, defend himself against a tiger, but he's not going to defeat a tiger. Having said that, in the water, he's done with the shark, and the same thing with the tiger. The tiger in the water is going to be dead. So if they're playing on a course with a lot of water holes and a lot of hazards, maybe I'd give it to the shark.
I think he's talking about an actual game of golf, and I feel like the bear is perhaps best suited to stand over a ball, swing it, you know, like a human would, and hit it 575 yards.
Well, Stugatz, in that case, in that respect, yes, I agree with you 100%. If you're just going to put a golf club and you're saying they're playing golf, but I thought you were saying, you know, the guy is saying if the mascots, if the nicknames went after each other on their own, you know, on their own strength just to defeat each other, to take each other out of the game, then it was going to be the tiger or the shark, depending on in or out of the water, whereas the bear, again, is just a spectator. Give him the golf clubs. I'm going with the bear. Agree with you 100%.
Ron,
how can a shark swing a golf club?
Ron, thank you. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Can a shark swing a golf club?
Bye, guys.
See you later, Ron. Again, Stugatz, I want you to imagine this, all right? There are no weather reports. Nobody knows anything about weather, but primitive man is just walking around, and he thinks the thing he's got to worry about the most is sort of a saber-toothed tiger. But then off in the distance, for the first time, a bolt of electricity hit something, and then seconds later, a thunderous sound that makes it seem like God is angry.
So the construct of this is lightning hasn't appeared for roughly 25
That's
years.
That's right.
Welcome to another Greg Cody Tuesday. A weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Oh. Phone's ringing again. Why don't you go ahead and answer that?
I'm not going to answer.
No, go ahead and answer.
You might as well see who it is.
Go ahead. Let's find out. Well. Let's find out.
It must be urgent.
Put it on speaker so we can hear them too.
Yes. We'll be there. Thank you.
Where are you going to be?
It's my doctor confirming that I have an appointment Thursday morning. Good guy, my doctor.
Mike wants to kill you.
I don't blame him at this point. Wearing a heavy shirt. I'm sweating. Things are happening, but you know what? I'm going to rally.
Everything okay, though? Just a normal checkup, a physical, like...
Oh, yeah. I did some blood work last week, and this is the week after checkup. You know, everything's good with me.
Oh, the follow-up after the blood work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As long as he tells me my liver's fine, we're good. We're good to go.
Technically, we really don't know if everything's okay. As in the follow-up to the blood work.
Yeah, we never know, really.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday, a weekly celebration of Caucasian mediocrity.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your SportsCenter update. University of Arizona has paused its plan to bring athletes back to campus Monday, citing a surge in COVID-19 cases in Pima County and the coronavirus pandemic's impact on the local healthcare system. University of Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel, football coach Jim Harbaugh, and men's basketball coach Jawan Howard will each accept a 10% salary reduction after the school projected a budget deficit of $26 million. And finally, dogs can understand as many as 250 words and gestures. The average dog is as intelligent as a 2-year-old child. Huh. Want to breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, feel healthier? Then take my advice and try Navage. I use it every single day to clean my nose and sinuses and absolutely love it. Go to Navage.com. That's NAVAGE.com. Or you can visit your local Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, Bed Bath & Beyond, or Target. For all the latest headlines and information, tune to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please, and we're going to update the polls in a second. At Le Batard Show, is the dog smarter or dumber than the average 2-year-old? Stugatz, help me understand something, because you tend to fluctuate all over the place. Your opinion changes, morphs. There is no need for consistency anywhere. Yesterday, the stat you kept hitting us with is Cam Newton's 0-8 in his last 8 games. Today, you come in here talking about Cam Newton's a Hall of Famer after 8 seasons. So which is it?
I'm going to go with Cam Newton's a Hall of Famer after 8 seasons. He is 0-8 in his last 8 starts. I was just throwing that in because it's funny. People didn't seem to point that out as they were praising the Patriots. But, Dan, looking at ProFootballReference.com, through eight seasons, his career, the numbers he's put up through eight seasons are comparable to those of Brett Favre, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Russell Wilson, and the Patriots. I cannot believe that. I still can't believe that only two teams were willing to speak to Cam Newton. And I can't believe the Patriots just got this guy who's only 31 years old. I know he's been hit a lot, but they got this guy just by waiting around. No one else was aggressive in their pursuit of Cam Newton. I find that to be pretty amazing.
Greg Cody, are you not a musty Football Hall of Fame voter? What do you have to do to be a musty Football Hall of Fame owner? You're the perfect age. You've got the perfect temperament and sensibilities for a gatekeeper protecting the sacred place. Is Cam Newton a Hall of Famer? And why are you or are you not a Football Hall of Fame voter?
I am not. I am in baseball, as you know, but not football. I think Cam Newton is on the road to Canton. I don't think he's there right now. But what really a shortcut to Canton is when you win a league MVP award, which he has. And that's going to help him get to the Hall of Fame, just as it's going to help Matt Ryan, to use an example.
So, Stugatz, usually the place that you end up on this is not that the winning that you have to do is the MVP. The winning that you have to do, I'm surprised that you wouldn't hold that MVP season and coming up short in the last game against him the same way you were ready to do to Patrick Mahomes if the last 6 minutes of the last Super Bowl had been different. Why can't you still be out here saying that Cam Newton can't win the important game? If that's so often your analysis for that position where you're talking about wins and responsibility for wins.
That's fair. Cam Newton, however, took a Carolina Panther team basically by himself offensively and got them to a Super Bowl and was the MVP of that year. Plus, I don't think we've seen the entire script yet for Cam Newton. Now, I know that's never stopped me before, but now that he's with Bill Belichick playing for that organization with that coach and that offensive coordinator, which should not be left out, at 31 years of age, Dan, if they could figure out the right offense to put around Cam Newton, I feel like together, Newton, Belichick, McDaniels, they got like a nice 6-7 year run here, and maybe Cam will win a Super Bowl or two. So,
do you realize
for the first time in my life, I'm waiting for the full story to be written? I don't know why.
You won't read it once it's complete. You'll just move on to other shiny objects. But it is really rare, Stugatz, that you get this combination of things. Okay. It's really rare that you get any kind of move that is simply consensus applause. Anywhere right. In sports, you cannot get consensus on anything. We can't agree on whether to wear a mask or not, or whether it's an infringement on freedom. And yet you will not hear a criticism anywhere of the Patriots getting Cam Newton this cheap. All you will hear in terms of criticism of this is the idea that Cam Newton can be had this cheap, but no one questions the move. But then as a second bonus for the Patriots, so you not only have this one move that simply does not have a dissenter, but it's also the move where everyone in the league is stricken with fear immediately upon seeing it because they're like, oh, wait, that guy with that team being innovative at every turn, can they polish him up and then sign him to another contract where they now have a quarterback for the next 7 years because they've figured out that he's betting on himself. He's super motivated. And I don't know whether he knows things about health that we don't know, but the idea that anyone this late, Stugatz, in free agency for no money could make that particular move, a move that comes with zero criticism and also makes everyone in your conference terrified of what you've done, that ain't normal in any way.